More details from the leak of confidential tax information as the leader of one tax shelter takes issue even with the phrase Paradise Papers.
This is a term that is used by those who are handling stolen property to give an air of respectability to what they're doing.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning.
We pay all the taxes we owe, every single dollar. We not only comply with the laws, but we comply with the spirit of the laws.
That's Apple boss Tim Cook testifying in front of Congress in 2013 after questions arose about how his company paid its taxes. Now, even more details have emerged of the lengths taken by Apple to find low tax arrangements for its international profits. I asked the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker, what's revealed in the Paradise Papers.
They show that the company shopped round for a tax haven after it had a crackdown on its controversial tax practices in Ireland. Now, what was it doing in Ireland? Well, its revenues outside the US were funneled through companies in Ireland that were effectively stateless for tax purposes and so were subject to very little tax. Ireland came under heavy pressure in the European Union over this arrangement and decided to eliminate it. Now, the company, Apple, wanted to find a new offshore home, and its legal advisers sent a questionnaire to the firm at the centre of the leak, named Appleby, the similarity to the Apple's name is entirely coincidental, asking questions about a number of jurisdictions, including this one. Is it possible to obtain an official assurance of tax exemption?
So what did Apple decide?
It decided on Jersey, which is it's a crown dependency of the UK, as it's called, and it's situated close to the northern coast of France. Now, we don't know the reasons for this choice, at least not from the documents, but it has a zero corporate tax rate for foreign companies, and that presumably contributed to the island's appeal to Apple. It's also apparent from the papers that Apple wanted to keep the move secret. One email between partners at the law firm said, "For those of you who are not aware, Apple officials are extremely sensitive concerning publicity."
Now, what's the response to all of this information coming out been from Apple?
A vigorous defence. It says it remains the world's largest taxpayer, paying $34 billion in corporation tax in the last 3 years, plus billions more in various other taxes. It says it follows the law and will comply if the system changes. And it is important to add that there really is no suggestion in these reports that Apple did anything illegal.
Andrew Walker, let's do the numbers. In Asia, markets are mostly up, with Japan's Nikkei leading the way. It hit its highest level in 21 years, climbing 389 points, or 1.73%. Markets in Europe are mixed. Now, although there's no official definition of a tax haven, a few places have come up repeatedly in the Paradise Papers: Bermuda, Jersey. Guernsey, an island located in waters between Britain and France, is not named in the leak, but has also been called a tax haven. Speaking to the BBC, the island's chief minister, Gavin St-Pierre, defended his territory's laws.
This is a well-orchestrated, ongoing political campaign using stolen data to promote an agenda about gaining public access to private financial information. We are all entitled to our privacy. And what Guernsey does, with the full support of organisations such as the OECD, is we share your data with tax and law enforcement authorities. In other words, those that need to know. What we need is a level playing field with global rules which are objectively and consistently applied.
Guernsey's Chief Minister Gavin St-Pierre. Now, yesterday we told you about the arrests of princes within Saudi Arabia. That and tensions between Riyadh and Iran are leading oil prices to hover at 2 years highs this week. Now, we tend to mention two numbers when we talk about oil price. Brent comes from the North Sea and refers to the European oil price. West Texas Intermediate is the U.S. price. I've been pumping Bob McNally, president of the Rapidan Energy Group, for more information on why those two prices diverged.
In the old days, before the shale revolution, WTI used to trade a couple dollars a barrel higher than Brent. And that reflected the cost of putting a barrel of Brent oil into a ship and shipping it over to the Gulf Coast. That's what that reflected. The U.S. was the big importer in the world. But when the shale oil revolution came along, everything changed, starting in 2010, 2011. And suddenly the United States had all this crude oil, but our policies and our pipelines pointed the wrong way. In other words, we couldn't sell that oil into the market at first. So all this oil in the United States backed up like water behind a dam. And this caused the price of WTI to do something very different, to fall sharply below Brent. WTI, in a way, became stranded from the global oil market and from Brent. So WTI at times traded $20 a barrel below the price of Brent. Now, markets resolved themselves and policy was changed, and we now, the United States, allows crude oil exports.
So when oil prices go down, do consumers see the benefits?
The folks who really benefit from that are U.S. refiners who are still able to run, because they get to sort of gorge themselves on very cheap feedstock, crude oil. But the product prices that they charge are still set globally. The consumer rides the roller coaster with everybody else and all over the world, really.
Bob McNally of the Rapidan Energy Group. Finally, no price rises ever on our podcast. You can listen free anytime wherever you get your podcasts. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.